Okay, dann herzlich willkommen, meine Daseinsformen und Menschen. Zum Glück ist nicht mehr ganz so heiß, sonst würde ich hier auf dieser Bühne wahrscheinlich ziemlich schnell verschmoren. Willkommen zu Lightning Talks. Welcome to Lightning Talks, ladies and gentlemen. Who in this audience does not speak German? Okay, that's a lot of people, so I will try to speak in English. Basically, I think you might all know what this is all about. Lightning Talks, anyone can come up to the stage, just talk about anything. Any topic is allowed if it's not just political propaganda or something. You have 10 minutes, then we will switch. We have a laptop, you can plug in your USB stick and display PDF slides. We have also Ethernet, so you can just call up the slides on your browser. Yeah, we have a microphone. I had a list of people who want to have talks, but I have it on my other hard drive, and the other hard drive is not here. So, who wanted to hold a talk? All right. I wrote to you if you're number one or two or three on the list. Yes. You want to come first? Okay. We have lots of time. I only have four people who came here in advance, so just come up and say something. Another thing, you might see that the slides are not very well visible. But we have, apparently on media.ccc.de, there is a stream with slides only. So you can select the stream on your own device and have a little cheat sheet on your smartphone if you can't really see the slides. Okay, that was the talk about Bass Banana. Then welcome.
Hello? Okay, it's working. Hello, I'm Mitek. I'll speak about Bass Banana. That is my project, stupid and funny project. This project was thought for Italian language, so I don't know if it works fine in English or in German or in other languages, but I'm sure that in Italian works fine. Is banana fruit? Yeah, but it's also a kind of word. A kind of word means that in '90s, when I was young, I got this book from an Italian author that was speaking on play on words. And my favorite chapter was called Banana, Ananas, Avocado and Ribes. Ananas is a pineapple for in English, and ribes is a currant, and the concept was that banana is a word that is formed by consonant and vowel, consonant and vowel, and so on, and so ananas is the same but starting with a vowel and ending with a consonant, avocado the same with both vowels, and so on. You can find a lot of words in Italian that are using this schema. In English is more difficult, but I have some examples. Locate, legitimate, manage, moderate, negative, and so on. I used bananas to create a randomic word that doesn't mean nothing, but can be spelled easy and can be also remembered well. And I used also for creating password because it was easy to remember, but it's very weak. And I have also a service that is an URL shortener that is called vado.li, that means go there. And when you create the short URL, the random code is a banana word. So it's easy also to speak at the phone and tell, oh, go to this address, and it's easier than other strange codes with numbers and capital letters and so on. So, yeah, it's sometimes useful. Then I got in touch with LibreMesh. LibreMesh is a project about mesh networking, and it's a firmware to allow some routers to make mesh networks. And when you flash the firmware the first time, the name of the router is LIME and 6 digit of MAC address. This is done because you can't create a random name, because if you flash it again, it changes name. So it takes the last 6 characters from the MAC address. But it's difficult to remember, and it's impossible to pronounce a LIME 34A9F2. It's difficult. And I thought, why not to convert this code in a banana? And for example, LIME double halo. Yeah, it's easier to pronounce and also to remember. Makes sense? Yeah, okay. And how I did it? Well, when you have bases, you have alphabets with symbols. And for example, binary, you have 0 and 1. For decimal, you have from 0 to 9. And so on. Base 64 has 64 symbols. Base banana has 2 alphabets. One for consonant and one for vowels. And when you are calculating, you're taking consonant and vowel, consonant and vowel. It's not the whole alphabet, because in Italian we don't have some letters. For example, X, W are not used in Italian. And also H and Q have a special... Q needs a U after that, and so was difficult to create a word that sounds good. So now we can start to count. Yeah, it's difficult to see it, but starting from 0, you have the first consonant is B, and the first vowel is A. So 0 is B-A, ba. And then you have B-B-Bo-Bu, all with the vowels. Then you switch to C. When you have ka, che, chi, koku, and you go on until ZU, that is ZU, is 69, and the next number is beba. So you add 2 letters, and you can count in a base banana. We have an example, I think it's not visible, but starting from 1, it has some examples. From 1, that is B, you arrive to 1 million, that is Peramepuga. But Peramepuga sounds good. Yeah, it's in some way I can remember it. There are different columns, because if the word is the banana word is short, you can add leading zeros. Like you add leading zeros in X, that is 0, 0, 0 something else, you can add BA, that is like 0. So B is the same as BABE, BABABE, BABABABE is always the same number. Okay. We are quite finished. I wrote a Python script that is also a library. So you have a different function. You can encode, decode, generate random banana numbers, and also check if it's a banana. You can change alphabets, because you can change the alphabet, add the letter you prefer. But you also make have more than two alphabets. So you can have three or four alphabets. It's difficult to see on the screen, but I use the Unicode, and I have an alphabet made with animals, and one with balls, and one with the fruits. And I can generate a number with I can encode using this alphabet a number, and also the number can be decoded using the same alphabet. I did porting of the Python library. It's not complete porting. I only few lines of code. But I did it in JavaScript, Lua, PHP, and Shell script. So if you want to test it or you want to improve it, you are free to do it. Yesterday, I had an angel shift in BGP, that is for shipping packets in, for parcel shipping. And the tracking code is a six-digit hex. And I thought, why, instead of having code 3C5B45, you can't use DNI FINA? Yeah, it's easier to search something with a word that sounds, and you can remember the sound for three seconds, but yeah. So, yeah, it would be, if you appreciate this project, would be a good idea to include in your project. If can be useful for your project to include the banana library. And I finish. Thanks to everyone. You can find the the documentation, the code on GitHub and on the main site, that is basebanana.org. And you can write a mail or call me using DECT, ETEC 4832. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was actually creepy. You should have brought a real banana and encode into the banana, but
yeah, I have a banana with the stickers on it. But
yeah, great. We need more stickers. Does the stream version work with the slides? Can you guys see it or nothing at all?
There's a question.
Yeah, a question.
What's your deck number in banana?
Well, the question is, what's his deck number in banana?
I don't know, but I can. If you go. Sorry. let me see. Firefox, if you go to base banana.
It doesn't type. It's not typing.
Not typing. Base banana. On the website, you can see the demo page, and you can find 4832 with no minimum length, so it's Zubi. Zubi is 4832. And it's easy on the website because there is a script running that can encode and decode with the standard alphabet.
Perfect, thank you. Okay, I see the next speaker is already up. Yeah. Come here, welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's check whether.
Do you need a browser or USB?
Yeah, free there is fine.
Okay. And you have a mouse too.
Perfect.
And you have a microphone.
Does the microphone work? Yes,
yes.
It works.
Here you go, 10 minutes.
10 minutes, okay. Hello everyone. I would like to say something about my tiny project, which is called Sorry Odro, Details to Come. I'm Rotrot. My dictaphone number is 4560. No idea how it will be in banana alphabet, but I'll learn anytime soon. A very brief disclaimer. I'm a computer scientist. I'm not a biologist or ecologist. So whatever is ecologically or biologically wrong here, that's my fault because I know zeros and ones. Okay. I would like to say something about a river that is basically linking three countries, meaning Czech Republic or Czechia, Poland and Germany, and apparently, most likely, some of you know which river I have in mind. Do you? Odra. And the Odra River starts in Czechia, Kozlov. It's 866 kilometers long. And flows through Poland and then becomes a border, natural border between Poland and Germany. It also forms an inland sea where it ends and goes to Ostsee and Morze Bałtyckie afterwards. So it's a pretty long river, pretty wide river. Luckily, it's not used anymore as an inland waterway. It's regulated throughout last 200 centuries, but given near to zero water traffic, it is fun to explore it, and I did it some time back, taking 600 kilometers out of it, so the majority of it. Unfortunately, given how well the pictures are seen, you won't see a very nice portfolio of pictures from the Odra River, so believe me, or these who can see them on the slides, I hope they'll appreciate. Anyway, let me slowly move to the merits of the presentation. Yeah, there's the stork on the lamp, some birds, some green areas, some river, more birds. And if some of you are still willing to camp more after the camp, you can go there and have a really nice, enjoyable trip by, I don't know, kayak, inflatable boat, whatsoever. Anyway, I've got a number of fun facts about Odra, and these fun facts relate to Poland specifically, because that's what I observed when I studied the whole problem. So as of November 2022, there were 751 water permits to dump sewage into Odra River, and its tributaries in place, meaning nearly 800 of institutions threw sewage into the river. But, and it's very important, only one permit application has been rejected ever, meaning we see some progress. One of 752 has been rejected. Unfortunately, the environmental impact is not taken into account when deciding upon these permits. So it's only a technical procedure to get the permit issued, and you're good to go. And some cities, majority of cities, dump sewage, water from mines, rainwaters, manufacturer companies, power plants. They do it all together and dump all that into the river. Anyway, when you swim it, you don't feel it. I mean, there is a huge disconnection between how you feel when going through the river and what's being dumped into the river. And most importantly, after the permit has been issued, no on-site verification is taking place, meaning they don't verify whether you actually dump what you promised to dump. So why not to overuse it? Let me put it that way. And for the ones that like numbers, I've got some. They are pretty outdated, but from 2020, there was a study that proved that Morze Bałtyckie, or how Germans call it, Ostsee, has been provided with 19 tons of zinc, 56 tons of copper, 7.5 tons of lead, and for 26 tons of nickel. And that's official. That's what Polish government admitted. And my feeling is that most likely the situation did not get there since 2012. There is the water quality index, which basically says that water in the Odra River is 4 or 5 out of 5 levels. And as you may guess, the best quality is 1. So we are at the very bottom here. And that's basically the reason why I'm here. Okay, some of you might have heard about the 2022 Odra environmental disaster. Basically, a mass mortality last year occurred in the Odra River that involved fish, beavers, crayfish and other wildlife, tons of these. I'm not here to show you the pictures. I don't like to see at these pictures at all. Nevertheless, the root causes are not known, but surely the following conditions contributed. We can consider it like a black swan effect or accident, but on the other hand, there was something going on before. Anyway, low water levels, reduced oxygen levels, pollution, and possibility of algal bloom definitely contributed, but these tons of precious metals contributed as well. That's my guess. Unfortunately, and that's why the project is called Sorry Odro, meaning you are apologized, Odra River. Poland was slow on reacting. There was near to zero information flow from Poland to Germany. And despite some movement and activity in this area, no real dynamics was observed. And because of that, I decided to run a small project, which is called Sorry Odro, because there was none to zero monitoring on the Polish side. And after a year, Polish officials decided to run 9 stations that constantly monitor the river and share the data. And this is why am I here. They monitor oxygen, acidity, temperature, and conductivity. Unfortunately, if you were born in the 90s, you don't know how data was shared in the 90s. But basically, the data interface they provide you with is a crap. So I decided to do something about it and to create this project. And the idea, the purpose of the project is to gather data from that source, integrate it, reshare it, and visualize it in a very proper manner, according to my standards, at least. And what's the goal of the whole project? The goal is to impose pressure on officials to make people aware and acting upon the quality of the water in Odra, but most likely in some more rivers. And most of you, I believe, remember the Luftdaten project, which changed a lot with respect to air pollution. So, of course, it's not that easy to run this kind of station, but you can still contribute to the project. And given that I'm also doing some science, I don't like looking at scientists gathering data and doing data preprocessing. So my goal was to create that and take that obligation from them. The website of the project is sorryodro.pl, but I believe if you want, you'll find it. It provides visualizations, it provides data about the station's reliability, so now I can inform the data sources about the problems in providing that data. Maybe they don't look at it. Technically speaking, it's a composition of Bash scripts, MariaDB structures, Sphinx, and Grafana. It's MIT licensed, and the source code is available on GitHub. I believe you don't see any visualizations here, but if you know how Grafana works, you know what to expect. And lastly, let me share some short and long-term goals with you with respect to that project. Firstly, I would like to make that data coming from both sources, meaning from Poland and Germany, because now we are working in a separate manner. So maybe that could be a good meta project to integrate the data from both countries. Obviously, now the project is in Polish, but I'm also working on translating it into Polish, English, and German. I would like to collaborate with some people that are somehow aware on the water quality levels and parameter quality, because I would like to introduce a framework that notifies people that the quality dropped below certain thresholds. And in a long-term run, I would like to provide a reliable data source for the society, researchers, decision makers, and would like to change the attitude of all the shareholders towards chemical waste and sewage dumping into Odra, and hopefully more rivers as well. So if you'd like to contact me, my phone is 4560, and the remaining links are barely visible, but the most important one is sorryodro.pl. And yes, this is also the invitation for collaboration, because I'm running the project myself and I'd be very happy to see more people involved. And that's pretty much everything I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for him? No. Okay. I think you got the website. And as a reminder, the stream is also recorded, so you can just have a look at it later, and you will see all the links and everything. You can just copy it. All right. next speaker already standing there. Of course, come up. Sure, no problem. Oops. I will close this. Here you go.
Do you have the slides there?
Slides for. Okay, we apologize for technical difficulties. The talk was supposed to be about a cow sticker collection. We will make sure to get the slides tomorrow. So if you want to know everything about stickers, come again tomorrow here, same place, and maybe we'll find a better solution for the Beamer or something. Yeah, anyway, thank you and applause. We'll see him tomorrow.
Hey, can you all hear me? Okay, raise your hand if you can see the slides. Oh, okay, cool. So 50%. So there's not a lot on the slides, some words and some flying spaghetti monsters, so you won't miss much. It's not full screen? Oh, we have to talk to the people in the back for that. The Beamer doesn't do that. Anyways, hello, I'm Sather. I'm a volunteer angel for the camp, and I also go by John. You can call me either. I come from California. I don't work for the Postal Service, but I love them, and I have a message for you. There's something I think needs to happen, and I'm here to help that happen. I think there needs to be a church of cryptography. So let's talk about our agenda. We'll go over the why there needs to be a church of cryptography, what is a church of cryptography, how you make a church of cryptography, when you should make a church of cryptography, and how you can all help with the church of cryptography. So let's begin. I hope this doesn't offend anyone. I'm not here to like say one religion is better than another, but I hope to convince you mine is the best at the end. I mean, ours. Yeah. Okay, so why are we here? As creatures of the universe, we have the religious rights to communicate with other creatures and gods of our choosing, using mathematical principles that hold true across the universe, across time. It doesn't matter if you're on this side of the Milky Way or the other side, cryptographic primitives hold true. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And You know, I think that's one of the unique things that we can all agree upon as creatures of the universe, and we get to reflect upon that. And that enables to do things. It enables this. These cryptographic principles let us communicate with individual identities securely, knowing that with some probability that no one will ever be able to read that. And that probability is very high. You know, there's more particles of sand than unique identities for some keys, and more identities than like atoms in space and time. And I think it's cool that we get to talk to each other securely. I think it's great. And when I have a child, I want to talk to my child securely. I want to be Alice. I want my child to be Bob. And I want Eve to stay way far away. You know, the Eve isn't needed here. And I come from the land of the US of A. And every couple of years, every couple of decades, there always seems to be a war on crypto. I survived the war on drugs. I grew up in the Emerald Triangle, and where a lot of people grew cannabis, and I understood what it meant to be watched upon by the state, and I saw what that did to the people's mindset. Privacy really mattered. It mattered for your freedom, and it mattered for the health and life welfare of your children. And I never understood why weed was illegal. It just didn't make sense to me. Now, encryption, I don't understand why it's illegal. And the U.S. government is constantly trying to edge their way into, you know, my Matrix servers. I don't want to give them the decryption keys. What's going to happen to me if I don't, you know? And what ground do I stand upon to even... Oh, I forgot to set my timer. Anyways, so there's a lot of reasons why I want this. And I do think, you know, a daughter should be able to talk to their mother in private. A prayer should be able to send to the gods of your choosing in private. And, you know, we have the right to maintain that. And so now, what's a church? What's a church of cryptography? For me, a church of cryptography is just a place to meet and talk about crypto and, you know, what it is, how it came to be, what it, you know, where is it going? There's all kinds of things in that space. And society is dealing with cryptography in a lot of different applications it never thought it was going to have to deal with. 30 years ago, nobody would believe that there was magic internet money, but cryptographic primitives made it so. And we all have to deal with those consequences and the freedoms of that. So in America, creating a religion, it's like it comes right before like having the right to own guns. It's part of the First Amendment. So the First Amendment gives American citizens the right to free speech and the right to practice the religion, you know, of their choosing. And if that religion doesn't work for most of the people, that's okay. Like, as long as it's not bothering anyone, it's welcome in America. And so we have Pastafarians who are welcome. They believe the flying spaghetti monster and stuff. We have the Native American church. They're allowed to do, you know, participate in religious ceremonies where certain drugs that are classified as Schedule I narcotics, which are the most illegal drugs in America, they can have those. They can practice those. The people can use those. And so creating a church is actually a pretty practiced thing in America. I don't know about the German government and the European states, but I imagine you also have similar freedoms here, and I apologize for my ignorance. So for us, you know, what do we do? Like, where's our first place of congregation? It's in the Matrix, and you don't need to take a red pill or a blue pill. You just need to go to Church of Crypto, matrix.org, and find us there, you know, my friends and all these fellow creatures. What are we going to be doing? We're going to be learning. We're going to be sharing the joys and pains of life in the cryptographic space. We'll be using end-to-end encrypted cryptographic protocols to do so. And yeah, maybe we'll create some nonprofits across the globe to help facilitate the resources and capital required to spread the love. When? The best time is now. You know, 4 years ago I was at camp and I wanted to do something awesome and I didn't know what to do. And I stand upon the shoulders of giants every day in the open source community, and I see all of you here and I feel the love, and I think this is one way I can give back. And I may not be here tomorrow, but I am here today, and this is what I want to do. And I'd love to inspire you to help out. You know, all creatures are welcome. And it's a great motto, so let's live by it. How can you help? join the channel, you know, start asking questions, start teaching people what end-to-end encrypted communication is, how it came to be, what are the primitives that make it so, and yeah, learn, love, listen, and grow. Thank you very much.
Amen, brother.
Thank you.
Yeah. Actually, when you said that it's sort of a universal principle, cryptography, that reminded me of a thing that Edward Snowden once said. He was talking to Neil deGrasse Tyson or something. They were speculating about aliens and Fermi paradox, why we haven't seen them. And Edward Snowden said, well, maybe it's just standard for all civilizations to at some point develop cryptography, and just it's just common sense to always make it, to always encrypt your stuff. So good cryptography cannot be discerned from random noise. So all the space radiation that we get, all the random noise, might be just alien civilizations talking without us noticing. So yeah, maybe that's it. Okay, we're already next one.
Hello. Okay, one of the principles or advantages of Lightning Talks that is not being talked about is that you do not get to choose the topic, but I get to choose the topic. So it means that I can talk about something that you might not want to hear, like if you're far away from home, pay attention to where you put your glasses. Or I can also tell you something that you always wanted to check out, but really never bothered. And depending on whether you can see my presentation, we might talk about one topic or the other. So give me a moment. Is there anyone who has trouble reading it? Can you put up your hand? Anyone has trouble reading it, cannot read it? Very few people, so maybe you can like rearrange yourselves. But, okay, so Prologue, what is it? It's a programming language, it's a logical programming language, and I bet you heard about it. It's like, what was it, sixth or fourth generation programming language, one generation more than the usual languages that we use today. But what is it actually? Why is it different? Why is it so, like, why was it hyped in two decades ago? Or, yeah, what is it? How is it special? What's so different about it? What can we learn from it? And where is it surprising? I had this question a couple of months ago, and as a total newbie, I'm going to give you an introduction of what I learned from Prologue and why it's interesting. So what I learned about is that Prologue can be thought of as a language that is a basically a database language. And here in the example, we have some data on the top in the data file. Can you read it? Yeah, let's say. So there's three facts. There is a fact, cat Fido, cat Tom, and cat Fritz. So what can you do with the data? You can query the data. If you load it into the interpreter using the data directive something, you can see the question mark is the prompt of the interpreter, SWIPL. You can query it using the cat X. The capital X means what is it? And as an answer, you get cat can be Fido, or it can be Tom, or it can be Fritz. So we queried our database and returned all the data that it had. Cool. Another database example, a bit closer to reality. Let's imagine that we have a image sensor that can emit data in two combinations, in combinations of formats. One is RGB, the other is UV, and it can return data in some frame rates, but not all combinations are possible. So we put in the data, config, RGB, FPS 24, and so on. We put on all the combinations, and that gives us a possibility to query it. So in the first line, you see here, there's config, R, and underscore. Underscore means we don't care, and R, capital R, means we want this to be listed. What are the options when we don't care about the other one? We don't care about the frame rate, we just want the format. So if we put in this as a prompt, you get two answers. It can be either RGB or U. So we queried our database for unique values of a certain column in some interpretation. We can also like set one column to UV and then query the frame rates. Or we can do something more complex. We can return entire configs with this syntax. We only care about configs which have RGB as a result. And then we get the entire configs which have RGB, but also they are already filled in. And so on. You can ask more general questions. In the last line, you have it's flowing off the screen, but you get all the combinations where you query it with two variables. And for the finish, can we have a combination of UV with 60 FPS? It says false. There are no answers. So you might have noticed that there are multiple answers sometimes. So it's more of a query language in this revision. But that's not all. Let's see at this example. This does not look like a query language. We are doing plus 1, 2, 3. 1 plus 2 equals 3. Yeah, that's right. And then we are adding 1 plus 2 equals what? And what is 3? No surprise there. What? Then we get plus a 2, 3. Like plus what 2 to get 3. Okay, this is kind of unexpected. First we got an answer in the third part, and then we get an answer in the first argument. So it correctly gives us the answer 1 plus 2 equals 3. So this is surprising, isn't it? So you do not get that kind of behavior in normal programming languages. There's usually, you cannot choose which argument is the output argument, and here you just did it. Maybe it's not a function after all. So this is kind of the mix between a query language and a language to figure out things in general. And let's take a look at a more complicated example. There is a directive, I don't know what it's called. There is a thing that is called append, and it appends a list to another list. And the answer is what? What is ABC when we add AB to C? Okay, not surprising, but let's keep going. Here we have a more complicated example, just like we had the plus example. So we add, what will we get if we, from a different perspective, the result is ABC, and we are appending A and B to what? Okay, 5 seconds for the answer. Who knows? Yes, a list containing B. Let's take a look at the answer. And there's going to be another riddle, so think about it. C. So there's another riddle. You get, that's actually more complicated. What do you append to what to get AB? There are two positions that you have to fill in. How does a programming language manage to do that? 5 seconds for you to think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the answer is, did you get it right? There is a list of combinations. First, it's X and Y is, X is empty, Y is and A and B. Second combination is A is in the first position and B is in the second position. Third combination is A and B are in the first position and the second position is empty. And I don't know why there is also the answer that is not possible, but okay, I'm just a beginner. So who got it right? Hands up. Yay, you're learning. So as you can see, this is not something that's like can be described as functional programming or anything like that. Those are not functions. This is Prolog is more of an engine to solve problems that you have based on like figure out the relationship between the facts that you give it. And yeah, how does it all happen? This is no magic. If you are trying to declare your own, I don't know, procedure equivalent, you just give it a couple of relationships. Here, the important relationships is A is lower than B, A is lower than C, C is lower than B. And I don't quite remember what it was about. I think it was about ordering that one is between the other. But basically, this is a simple example of a function. So you can actually write this. There is no arcane magic behind it. Actually, there is, but not on the level that you are going to deal with normally. Those are just ensuring that those numbers have been declared as facts before. It doesn't really matter that much. So this is what I wanted to tell you about Prolog. It's different. It's useful. It's an engine for querying facts. It's an engine for figuring out relationships between facts. And it's not using functions. When I was learning it, there was a guy on IRC who was asking questions and trying to write basically Java in Prolog. It was really painful to watch. So if you learn Prolog, if you try to learn Prolog after this talk, pay attention to unification and backtracking. Those are the two magical concepts that you should learn, because otherwise you're just not going to have fun at all. And yeah, this is how you get multiple answers, and this is how you solve things like Sudoku using Prolog. And if you want to learn more random projects of mine, my website is dorotac.eu, or you can come on Friday to Chaos Zone, and I'm going to have a talk about embedded Rust. I don't know what time yet, but it's going to happen. Actually, a workshop, so you can also participate, bring your laptops. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Oh, your glasses are broken? Yeah. That's what you mentioned in the film. Okay. Yeah. Any questions for her? All right, we still have time for one more talk. You got it. All right, the sticker collection is back out online, I think.
Second try, let's hope it works.
All right.
Okay.
Stick.
Test, test. Okay, hello everyone. My name is Moritz. And when Corona has hit, I was bored. And basically the idea is I created a sticker collection because I missed chaos events and sticker boxes. And I also have to say that my laptop is like a sticker-free zone for various reasons. So I thought, okay, let's collect photographs or even better templates of stickers. So, yeah, that's easy to replicate. And I've put I went around the internet and looked up where I can find these templates for all these kind of stickers you see in sticker boxes over here, over there, and lots of stickers I knew, and it was a bit hard to track, but I got quite a few, quite a lot. It's not really good to see here, basically it's now about over 500 stickers I've collected. It's not all templates. Some of the stickers you see here, basically it's everything is on GitHub. The code itself for this JavaScript and HTML, it's all on GitHub as a site. And you can just put some random name, some query in that search field, for example, Freifunk or Chaos, and then it will quickly filter out all the tagged images and the source, and, well, if possible, the author, license, and stuff. And, I did it on GitHub basically because it's easy to track, easy to extend, fork, merge. I just wanted to make it easier for other people to just copy and replicate, and just in case I get bored. Again, let's call it distracted by other projects. And and also a small shout out to other projects, for example, the Chaos sticker collection, Chaos Sticker Operation Center, which does something similar. There's also hackerarchive.org. Thank you. I don't really remember all the links there, which is a bit more detailed with descriptions. And if you have stickers and you have even better the template, maybe send it to you, to me by email or on GitHub, make a pull request. I will integrate it. And then it's for everybody to copy and to modify whatever the license allows. And we will hopefully have more accessible stickers, more varieties. That's it's always good. And thank you so much for your attention.
All right, thank you very much. Actually, is there a sort of sticker box here at camp, or are there several boxes? Or does anyone know? Yeah, you can tell me later, then I'll ask you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, the hour is basically already full. I apologize for the technical difficulties. Are there any people here who still wanted to have a talk but didn't have the time? Okay, I think we just made it. So tomorrow, same time, I will try and improve a bit the techniques. So see you again tomorrow.